Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello, today's guest is Shannon O'Shields, VP of Marketing for Rubik's Foods. Rubik's Foods is a company that is at the forefront of flavor and product trends for some of the nation's leading restaurants and manufacturers. Shannon, welcome to Fork Tales. We're glad to have you with us today.
Thank you, Michael. Happy to be here.
So, I mean, it's really kind of fortuitous to have you because you're in the middle of doing all this stuff with trends and flavoring and developing palates. And in our company, we have a company that focuses on restaurants, and then we have a company that focuses on CPG. So this is like sort of right down the middle, like right down the alley. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So start off, just tell us a little bit about Rubik's Foods and what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rubik's is essentially a flavor and ingredient innovation company. And really what that means is that we are helping mostly restaurants, but also food manufacturers concept and develop the next big menu item. We work with about 70% of the top QSR and FSR restaurant chains, and we're really focused in flavor delivery platforms. So sauces, glazes, spreads, that sort of thing. But we also have, you know, a full R&D and innovation arm that is really focused on developing unique flavor and ingredient technologies, getting patents and some intellectual property that is really helping to develop kind of new abilities to keep things crispy or to make things have, you know, longer shelf life and more of the science side of food development. But really our bread and butter is, again, that flavor delivery platform. So I think when we talk about this industry, it is a very competitive one. We are certainly not the biggest food and flavor innovation company, but what really sets us apart and sort of what we kind of focus on is really the market research and consumer insights aspect, which plays a huge role in what we do. And then also speed to market. Because of our size and our the team members that we have here, the expertise in-house, we are able to be much more nimble and agile, and we don't have, you know, that level of bureaucracy and red tape that maybe some of our bigger competitors might have. And that has been extremely beneficial in the restaurant industry over the past couple of years as LTOs and new flavors have entered the marketplace. We're able to help restaurants capitalize those at really the peak of their virality and really take advantage of trends much faster than maybe they could have previously.
Yeah. I mean, in this world, we've got to create flavors at the speed of social, right? I mean, the flavors are changing, people are learning, and we're going to talk a lot about that because, again, what you do and what we do is it's absolutely separate, but it's actually right down the middle as far as really the same understandings. So for like the last, I think it's 15 years, our agency Quench has produced food and beverage trends. And by doing this, by the way, you are now volunteering to be one of my people I can reach out to for help. So, you know, putting you on the spot there, but it's amazing because we as a marketing firm did it just because it's like, well, if you're going to be experts in food and beverage, whether it's restaurant or whether it's in the CPG space, you got to know what's going on, right? So we did our first trends report and, you know, at first it was like, okay, this is what's happening in the world. And it was like, okay, this is cool. We shared it internally. And we're like, this is really good. Like, let's share this externally. So we just gave it away and we've been doing this now for 15 years. So I'm excited. Some of the stuff that I'm seeing about you or stuff that we saw, by no means are we in your world. We're not nearly as good at the trending and all that, but it's just neat to see how things evolve over the years and what's popping right now. So
yeah, for sure.
So you're tracking flavors and product trends for restaurants, which is, as we said, it's no small feat. Trends come and go at the speed of social. So what's your process for identifying trends, specifically actionable trends and restaurants might want to pay attention to?
Yeah. So we, you know, obviously this plays a huge role in what we do, and you know, everything that we develop has to be sort of coming from some sort of human insight. And so we have a full consumer research and consumer insights department here in our Jacksonville-based innovation center. And we're able to do more of the kind of qualitative research, so concept testing, that sort of thing. But we're also able to do more of the scientific and quantitative research as well. So we have a full sensory program and things like that. But when it comes to really identifying, like, what is the next big flavor trend going to be? We do have a team that is really dedicated to trend forecasting and what we call culture tracking, which is really following much bigger macro level trends like global flavors, snacking, like at a much higher kind of categorical level, and really watching those as they move down the menu adoption cycle so that we have, you know, a kind of formalized methodology to say, you know, over the next 6 months, this specific flavor may be ready for the QSR segment versus maybe, you know, something that's much more fine dining, obviously, is going to be taking advantage of trends way earlier than something in the QSR space. But our job and where the real art of consumer insights comes into play is trying to identify that exact point where it makes sense to bring certain trends to certain customers in certain segments. And I think that has gotten extremely difficult and more complex. You mentioned with social, with the kind of growth and evolution of social media, finding ways to leverage trends and to understand which ones are going to have longevity, which ones truly are just fleeting trends that are going to be gone in the next month or so. That is a really difficult feat. And so over the past couple of months, we've actually been tapping into social media and building out influencer programs so that we really have a pulse on what the consumer wants and doing much more listening than telling. So often, you know, historically, companies like ours have walked into, you know, a big QSR brand and said, hey, this is what you need. And instead of doing that, now we're going in to these customers and saying, hey, this is what your customer wants. And here's the proof point. And here, this is how they're asking for it. This is the gap they're seeing in the marketplace. And this is why we really believe that you have a unique opportunity to bring it to life in a meaningful way. And so we have had to pivot the way that we aggregate and kind of consume insights that we're getting today. But I think, you know, from a true marketing perspective, I think market research in general is in a bit of an evolution, and a lot of the former tactics that we used to do, surveys and these sort of anonymous polls online, that really is having to change. And we do need to have a face to the name and to the data. And, you know, I talk a lot about how I learn more from the comment section on a TikTok from an influencer than I do from, you know, a $1,000 survey that polled 500 anonymous consumers. And so that is really telling, and it's scary, but it's also pretty interesting for a marketer to say, hey, you know, the traditional ways of doing things are no longer working or no longer giving us the results that we need when we need them. And so we've had to make a lot of adjustments that, you know, especially for a B2B brand, weren't necessarily as understood or maybe as approachable. But again, trying to be sort of on the cutting edge of delivering some of those insights, social media has been a great new kind of advent to our consumer insights and market research toolbox. And it's something that we really plan to expand upon in the future.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, we actually, as a company, you know, Quench and Vigor, we had a sister company in our portfolio that was called Leap. And at first, it was a research company. And that's what it was. It was qualitative, quantitative research. That's how marketing was done over the years, right? You went, took time, you found out, you did these long reports. And that company evolved into more of an innovation company because the research side of it was at the speed of social again. Just going back to that, it was like one of those things where, like, if you want to know what's going on, you don't have time to field a report for 3 months. It's happening right now, and it's going to change soon. It's just, it's incredible. And you know, the other thing you said that really resonated with me, and it's kind of funny. Like, as I mentioned, we would do these trends presentations, and again, not on flavors could be a part of our trends presentation, but it was really more a global what's happening in the food industry, whether it's restaurants or CPG. So it was more than just flavors, but it was funny because I would go into these presentations, and depending on where I was in the United, and it was always in the United States, but depending on where I was, different trends had elevated faster than others. So in one case, you might tell people about, and this is going back many years, but like say 12 years ago, might tell people about food trucks, and people would be like, wow, food trucks, those were all just roach coaches in New York City that had terrible food, you know, but then, and so that was like new and to some people like gourmet, right? That was new to some people, but then you'd be out, I remember being in Dallas and doing it and they're like, look out in that parking lot, there's 12 gourmet food trucks there now. So then, which brings up the other thing is a trend to your point earlier is it's not something that no one's heard of, because why would we monetize and spend time and effort into something no one's ever heard of? You don't want to be the first person, but you also don't want to be in the very tail end of it, right? I mean, so you'd really got to thread that needle. I mean, it's a really, really tough thing. So what's your favorite flavor trend right now? What are you liking right now?
Yeah, so, and this is going to sound like a very canned answer, but I'm really, especially as an organization, really bought into and loving just the global flavor trend. We love it because there's just so much breadth there. I think, you know, taking something like Asian flavors that used to be such a blanket term, and now it is so much more approachable to break up. You know, it's not just Asian. It's we want Indian flavors, we want Korean flavors, we want Japanese flavors. And before we were working, you know, to really have these like broadly approachable flavors of an Asian sauce, but now we're able to just be so much more realistic and authentic to those flavors because there is an audience who is really demanding that. And so we're really excited about the global flavors trend in general. I also think swicy, we love to do a little word smush, the sweet and spicy trend has been really, really exciting. It has grown so much since things like, you know, hot honey. We get a lot of customers who are coming to us and asking questions like, what's the next hot honey? And so our team is really working to explore different flavor profiles to really find which one is kind of hitting with the biggest demographic, what makes sense, what is approachable heat that kind of balances with a really sweet flavor. And so that has been another trend that our team is really excited by and sees, again, longevity and opportunity across different segments. It's regionally agnostic. Everybody really likes that. It works on a lot of different food platforms. And so I think that's another one that we're really excited by and personally something that I also enjoy.
And it's crazy because, as you all know, like global flavors, global fusion used to be something you'd only see at higher end restaurants, right? So if you could afford to go out to these white tablecloth restaurants, or if you were able to travel a lot, you got to expand your palate, and you sort of assume that's where it all came from. But we're seeing it so much more in the QSR level, which is really exciting. And what are you seeing in terms of global flavors and global fusion?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We are starting to see it really land in more of the QSR space now, which is really exciting. I think Gen Z is a large reason for that. They're the most diverse demographic in history, and they're really excited about trying new flavors. And again, I think social media has a lot to do with that. I think they see that, and that is really evolving how they crave and the foods that they want to go out and experience. When you have accessibility to those things, there's going to, you know, be a draw and drive traffic. But in terms of really what we're seeing, we actually just had a meeting with a large QSR retailer who we shared several different Asian-inspired flavors, Japanese flavors, Chinese flavors, all with different spice ranges and things like that. And they kind of, you know, pushed back and said, you know, we don't know if we really have a right to be in this space. You know, we sell chicken and burgers and fries. And so we had a big conversation about kind of the why. And, you know, we can talk about this a little later, but the way to introduce some of these global flavors onto a menu through LTOs and things that aren't necessarily permanent fixtures on your menu, but show that you are trying to develop flavors that, you know, resonate with your audience. And so some of the way that we're seeing global flavors really enter menus is, you know, having something like a gochujang sauce that is actually paired with a ranch, or something that is paired on something that's super approachable. We've seen yuzu and some of, you know, milkshakes and things like that. And so they're having a really great way to get some of these exotic flavors is introducing them on a very familiar format, a fry, a milkshake, a chicken tender. I think, you know, one of the best sort of examples of brands who have done this really well is wing chains. You never think twice about a BW3s right. or Buffalo Wild Wings. I always call it B-dubs. I'm from Ohio, so. Yeah,
that's what they're called. Yep.
But, or, you know, a Wingstop or wing chains really exploring these super aspirational exotic flavors. And I think those have been such a great litmus test to say, oh, you know, BW3s has a Thai curry sauce and it's been on there for years. There must be something to that. Let's explore that. Let's see how we might be able to create a really approachable Indian-inspired flavor or Thai-inspired flavor on a traditional QSR menu. But I really do believe that, you know, the flavor itself, as long as it again is driven by, you know, the demand of the consumer, I think any global flavor has a place on a QSR menu as long as you're putting it on a platform that makes sense, that tastes good, and sometimes putting it around, you know, a cultural moment that really makes sense. Is it trending? Is there, you know, we actually talked about, you know, the Olympics that are about to take off, and, you know, what a great time for brands to be exploring global flavors and being able to tie that to a true cultural moment from a marketing perspective, and having a right to win and a right to play and a really exploratory flavor space by taking advantage of just sort of the outside elements right now. But yeah, we're seeing a lot of really exciting flavor profiles enter the marketplace, like Korean flavors, Korean barbecues, Hawaiian flavors, a lot of spins on more tropical Caribbean flavors. It's been really exciting. I think there's really not much is off limits at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because going back to some of the things that we had learned, you know, again, we just did it to self-educate the trends. And I think it was back, probably going back almost 13, 14 years. I should have a list of all the years and all the different trends because it's just interesting to see how they evolve. And one of the things that we're talking about Gen Z, which you're absolutely right. That's who's pushing all this through social and everything. But what I learned way back then, which I found very interesting, is when a lot of the Gen Z was young and in grade school, it was the most multicultural group of kids put together. And so again, going back to what we had just said, you would think these global flavors come from the business traveler who's traveling, you know, and going to these white table, and that's where this flavor comes from. They come back and say, hey, we need to have this Thai chili, you know, crisp flavor in our, but it actually, the kids at school lunches would share stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that was where a lot of these flavors emanated. And they'd come home and say, hey, mom, I want to try something that's got, you know, whatever, Thai chili in it or something flavorful. So it was really driven by children in school with their friends. I found that to be
amazing.
That's
wild.
Yeah. And now here we see it come the whole way through. And you see it in you know, it, as you said, it's easy to do it in a sort of an upscale restaurant because it can be a dish for the night. But when you start to get into a QSR, we're talking, you know, scale, right?
And yes,
it's a big bet then. It's not just a special on Friday night.
Yeah. And I mean, this is getting much more granular into, you know, what our business does. But I think that is one of the really complex and challenging things about QSR in general is the scale at which you need to develop these products, how you need to develop them in a way that works with the operations, the supply chain element, the price point, all of the complexities of developing a product that still tastes good and authentic, but tastes the same every time it gets there, can be ambient and doesn't need to be refrigerated, like all of those really intense technicalities of, you know, the QSR, FSR space, it does make developing these things much more complex than, you know, a fine dining restaurant who can go to the farmer's market and make it in their back of house day of, you know, that's not realistic in the restaurant space. And so that's one of the things that our team really works hard on. And we have a, you know, when you work with us, you have a sort of full service team of people in supply chain, operations, commercial, who are really thinking about how to translate this, you know, fine dining inspired concept into something that can actually be adapted to a QSR or FSR menu. Because you're right, it is much harder to do that in the landscape that we're in today.
Yeah. And so, and I know you guys get involved in some, I'll say food manufacturing as well, not just restaurant, mm-hmm. but so we can go from, it's super easy to be a gourmet restaurant and try something in the back of the kitchen for a Friday night from the farmer's market. But then when you get into the restaurant side of things, it's harder to scale. Then when you take it a little further and we go into sort of the manufacturing space, you get into the mm-hmm. CPG world, it's, you got to really be sure. And it's amazing yeah. to me. You know, I've been working in this space far too long on the CPG side, and they would take, I remember some the bigger companies, I mean, they would wait a year, 2 years, they'd be testing flavors and maybe this and maybe do that with it. Or what do you think about it? Then test more, oh, yeah. test more. Now, I mean, we have one of our clients is snack food, potato chips. They did something which was a pretty cool collab. They'd taken restaurant flavors from local restaurants in Philadelphia, and they turned it into a competition, and they allowed people in Philadelphia to pick what's their favorite restaurant flavoring, and they adapted it onto their potato chips. Cause like you were talking about like a Buffalo Wild Wings. I mean, you know, you can put all these different flavors and try something on a wing. It's a little harder in CPG for sure, but they were doing that now in snack food and potato chips. And we even saw Doritos did coriander flavor. I mean, and Ocean Spray has a jackfruit flavor. And these are just not normal. I mean, I'll say normal. They're not commercial flavors, you know, that you're used to finding in the grocery store. So it's kind of, it's amazing the speed of it. And you had said it comes back to a lot of the social side of things. You want to talk about that a little bit? Social influencers and what you're doing with that?
Yeah. So, it is very interesting. And back to your point, honestly, about just the kids eating lunch. I mean, that is really what is happening just on a massive scale through massive platform now. I mean, when you think about TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, the access that everybody has to seeing what everybody is doing. And I think that, you know, food in general has a bit of cultural magnetism where we all eat food, right? We all have our own unique food experiences. And so it's extremely interesting and sort of nuanced and novel to pull up your phone and see how other people are experiencing dinner time and seeing other flavors that you've never seen before. And food influencers have really tapped into that. And I think traditionally they have been used by the industry to help drive traffic after concepts are already developed, doing taste testing and food reviews in cars are one of the most viral and watched pieces of content on social media. And so we saw that and saw, again, the virality and how our customers are paying so much attention to that. And I think we just saw how there was such a huge untapped opportunity to actually work with those influencers mm-hmm. way earlier in the process. Like, why are we waiting until we've already spent all that time and all that money and all that thought equity to develop a product if we're not 100% sure that people even want it? And so I think what we're trying to do with our, what we call the Next Flavor Network, which is a collaboration with food influencers, is really to remove that guesswork and bring them into our food development process, working with our chefs, working with our, you know, marketing analysts, and actually working with us to ask their audiences what they're interested in tasting. What are their ideas? Like your, you know, Philadelphia example, like what are the things that you've tried that you've loved? And doing that right now so that we can start to develop those, remove the guesswork, not need all of that tedious concept testing, and actually take a Gen Z approved concept to a customer and be able to tell them, not this is what you need, but this is what your customer is asking for. This is what they're wanting, what they said that they will go to your store and buy. And so that is kind of the genesis or the concept of our influencer campaign. And I think that it's something that has really filled a knowledge gap that we identified in the marketplace for, you know, our industry, where, you know, you have these great, brilliant companies like the McCormick's mm-hmm. of the world who are developing these reports that are showing, you know, here are the flavors to watch in the future. And we are consuming that content. We are paying attention to the great work that we're doing. But we also realize that those are flavors that are 1 year, 2 year, maybe even 5 years out from being on mainstream menu. And then we have syndicated secondary research that says, you know, here's what's on menus today that's doing really well, or maybe not doing really well. But there was no one who was really developing insight and reporting of this is what people want right now that is missing. And here's what needs to be on the menu in the next 6 months, the next 9 months, the next 12 months. And that's kind of the sweet spot that Rubix has really been trying to play in, is tapping into that via influencers so that we can keep up with the speed of social, but also leverage our unique skill set, which is speed to market. There's very few people that will be able to allow brands to take advantage of these social trends at the peak of their virality and actually get them on a menu while consumers still care about it. But we also believe that is what brands need to do if they want to win with Gen Z, if they want to steal share from their competitors who, let's be honest, are very hard to differentiate today. Mm-hmm. You know, the QSR landscape is very similar. And there's, you know, the chicken wars, the fry wars, the breakfast wars, now the value wars. There isn't a ton of differentiation. And, you know, having unique flavors, having LTOs, and leveraging emerging trends is a way to break that cycle and to get new traffic through your restaurants. And again, we really believe that our influencers, two of whom are very well known in the food space, Nate Lauren and Alexis Frost, and then another one who is more of a lifestyle, Matt James. He's a former bachelor, who very well known through lifestyle customers, but also is a huge foodie and is New York based and really starting to showcase, you know, what the restaurant landscape in the U.S. and globally is really like. And so tapping into a very diverse influencer set who nearly half of their audience is Gen Z.
Sure.
It's been a great way for us to really understand what this community wants. And again, doing much more listening and data mining than just assumption based concept testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. Cause, you know, again, I've been doing, said for a very long time, and we all remember when I say, you know, you might hire a celebrity or a sports person to endorse your product, you know, and they come on TV and say, buy this health, this life insurance. And it's funny because you think, well, why would anyone listen to, you know, a guy that can hit a baseball to what life insurance I should buy, right?
Right.
But now we slide, you know, fast forward, you know, history repeats itself, because now you have these influencers who are just folks, and, you know, they have a following, and they're telling you what to eat, what to taste, what to buy. And now they're even going so far as they are becoming brands, right? So
like
we've worked with, as from a marketing standpoint, we work with influencers all the time, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so like we worked with Mr. Beast Sun-Made Raisins. And now Mr. Beast has Mr. Beast bars. And so he's a brand, right? Chamberlain Coffee. I mean, there's all these like YouTube phenomena that kind of pop and become their own brands, and it's just fascinating to me. I mean, let's face it, every housewife, I mean, yes, I watch The Housewives sometimes. I think they're all doing it, not just because they're angry with each other, but because they can launch a product, right? I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, they're all selling, they're all creating companies. So it's just a fascinating time. I just it blows my mind. And I think you guys are super smart for creating your program with the next opportunity, so that you can find out next flavors, so you can find out real time what's going on.
Right.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I don't want to put you on a spot here, but what is there a restaurant you think it's doing a really good job of this, like of kind of harnessing these flavors?
Yeah, you know, there's several. You know, even on the mainstream side, I think one that's been really, really interesting to watch is choose one of the biggest in the world, McDonald's, because they have this opportunity because they're such a global brand. And we're starting to see that they're slowly introducing some of their global flavors into the marketplace. They just have started releasing a Japanese black garlic sauce that they have into the marketplace. And what's just so brilliant about that is that they already have insight, and they already have probably some bit of a formula, right, that they know is really working there. And now they're introducing that into the marketplace in the U.S. based on an audience demand and demographics that they know are going to make sense for them. And so I think it's been exciting to see what they've done and what they'll continue to do by bringing back some of their global flavors or even full builds into the U.S. And part of that, again, is due to social, because we have access to the internet. We can see what McDonald's France and what McDonald's, you know, Japan has. And if you look at some of the conversation around McDonald's, a lot of it is, why don't we have that at the US McDonald's? Why don't we have that? And so, you know, their teams are probably analyzing that information and seeing where they have the biggest opportunity to introduce international flavors. I think Taco Bell is another one. Selfishly, they're one of my favorite fast food chains, but they're another one who has done an incredible job of monitoring trends far in advance that they think are going to make sense, and doing these just incredible buzzy, very Gen Z focused collaborations. The Cheez-It intro that they've just recently done is just a kind of masterclass in long-term consumer insight and monitoring and then food innovation. I've heard that that actual concept took 2 to 3 years to develop, which means that 2 to 3 years ago, they had a team who knew that Gen Z's favorite snack is cheese crackers, so Cheez-Its, and that it would make sense to somehow integrate that into Taco Bell menu. And it's not something that's super obvious. It was a risk, but they did that, and it has, you know, done a great job. It has done exactly what I'm guessing they wanted, what is generate buzz, get attention with Gen Z, and marry two of their favorite brands. Another one, I mentioned this already, that I think just does a really incredible job of introducing really exotic and emerging brands is Shake Shack. They are a prolific LTO brand. They release a lot of different LTOs. They are more on the premium side, but they're doing a lot of really exotic flavors in approachable ways. So putting something that maybe you wouldn't traditionally think of, or maybe something you've never even heard of or ever tried, but mix it in a milkshake, and I'm much more likely to try it because it's hard to have a bad milkshake, right?
That's right.
It's hard to have bad fries. And so they've done a great job of testing and learning, and you know, brands like Starbucks do the same thing. They're very quick to say, okay, this didn't work. Take it off the menu. It's not coming back. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of players out there who are taking some of those leaps through LTOs because they're more low risk, and doing a great job of driving traffic, getting that buzz, and being known as the brand that is willing to take a little bit of risk to get your eyeballs and your money through the drive-thru.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Okay, so we're going to play a quick little game here with a rapid fire where I'm going to name a restaurant, product, or flavor trend. And you tell me if you think that's on trend, you know, if the trend is hot or if it's not.
Okay.
All right. Spicy foods.
Hot. Yeah. Pun intended.
No, right. I was going to say, no pun intended.
Literally hot. Yeah, no, definitely.
Desserts.
Hot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pimento cheese.
It's an interesting one, but I'm going to say hot.
You want to explain that a little bit, why it's interesting?
Yeah. So I think traditionally you would think that is a very regional flavor, right? I think that a lot of people would think that pimento cheese is a bit polarizing, but that is a really interesting one where it really is leveraging several different macro trends, you know, regionality, cheesy is its own macro trend. It's one of the, you know, the biggest flavor drivers out there. And then just putting that on something that people really love. So I'm like Chick-fil-A pimento cheese sandwich has literally, you know, exploded. And I think that was one where sometimes it just takes one brand to put it on their menu and really get the awareness that you need to actually try it and see it. And now we've actually started to see growth in grocery with pimento cheese and starting to see it on other QSR menus. And so I think that's a really interesting one where when you first look at it, it may seem a little polarizing, but it really just takes that trial. And I think that is just one that I know our team has really watched and seen growth in the category as a whole. So yeah, I think that's a fun one.
And it's been around forever. Pimento cheese has been around forever. Yes. And now sort of like reintroducing it as a unique flavor. So
right, exactly. It's funny.
How about tamarind?
Warm. Can I say warm?
Yeah.
I definitely think that, again, that's the flavor of the year with McCormick. I think that we've definitely seen it in early sort of adoption phases or, you know, early inception phases of the menu adoption cycle. But when, you know, in our world, in the QSR restaurant space, I don't see it being on menus in the next year or two. But I definitely see the reason for that. And yeah, I would say warm.
Nice. You know, it's funny. We had in our trends this year, we had some trending flavors And I'll throw just a couple at you. You can tell me what you think. I'm sure you've heard of them all. Again, we're doing this from a different perspective, but chili crisps was one.
Yes. We're doing a lot with chili crisp. And what's, and again, interesting about that, it takes one kind of brand to really blow it up. Trader Joe's. That's all we ever hear about is the chili crisp at Trader Joe's.
Absolutely.
And that is one where it's like, now we are making every iteration of chili crisp that we can possibly make and showing that to customers. So that's a huge one.
Yeah. Coconut curry.
Ooh. That's an interesting one. Yeah. Coconut we've seen. Yeah. Coconut curry. Yep.
Pickles was one that popped.
Oh yeah.
Pickles are big.
We're in a pickle renaissance right now. That's what I like to say.
Now some of these are a little obscure, so I don't know. I mean, mispronounce them. One is Moringa. I'm familiar with that. South and Southeast Asia. Another one was Aku, A-C-H-U, Aku. It's a soup, Africa.
A-C-H-U.
Yeah. Mm. Iru was also West Africa. And then the more the common, but not that common. Well, jalapeno infused anything. Mm-hmm. And then I mentioned jackfruit too earlier, which actually I was surprised that Ocean Spray did a crayon jackfruit combination, but pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. No, that is cool. And I think, you know, with some of those, different, what's really interesting, you mentioned spicy before. I think that is how we're going to see a lot of these new flavors come in is, you know, spice. It's not enough to just be hot anymore. You need to have a little bit more depth to that heat. And so we're going to start seeing heat through introductions of more exotic flavors like that, like maybe even African profiles, or Caribbean profiles, or a lot of the, you know, Japanese and Asian profiles. But I think, you know, that is where we're going to start to see some of that expansion through introductions and in the spicy category as well.
Yeah. I mean, even as I said, the slowest to grow for obvious reasons is at the CPG side, because again, that scalability and the amount of ingredients, cost changing, the everything.
Packaging,
everything. It's just so much, such an arduous process. But I know one of our clients is Starkist, and we actually did a ton with flavor. So it wasn't just enough to have it be hot. We did, you know, sriracha. You know, Tapatio. We did all kinds of different versions of hot in the tuna because, I mean, a lot of these products are great flavor holders, right? I mean, you go back to the conversation about wings, right? Great flavor holders. And that's a great way to get new consumers into the franchise. And it's exciting, right? So there's something new. I loved your idea on the LTO thing. And when the restaurant side, you nailed it. Everybody wants more customers. That's their big thing. Yeah. We need more people coming in the door. But they don't want to do massive discounts, which everyone respects that, you know.
Yeah.
So the LTO and trying flavors is really what it's all about. Keep it exciting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest challenges that operators told us they were having in 2024 was driving new traffic. And that's really interesting because historically they're focused on, you know, loyalty programs and customer retention. But, you know, Gen Z is the big buyer of now, right? That's who everybody is chasing because there's so many of them. They have so much disposable income. They love eating out, but they do lack brand loyalty. So if you're trying to drive new traffic, what you need is something new and exciting. You need them to crave it. You need them to want to come back. And I think, you know, Crumbl is a great example of a brand who has leveraged the kind of FOMO of if you don't get it this week, you missed it, it's gone. And I think that mentality is just going to become more and more critical as social media becomes, you know, even more of a component of our lives, which it's hard to imagine it becoming any more important to us than it is today. But, you know, I think that, you know, that is LTOs in general are incredibly good at getting that attention and getting eyeballs through on the menu and people through your restaurant. And I think we are going to start to see this strategic shift in how operators really build and create their menus. We believe LTOs are sort of the future of menus and finding a way to, you know, carve out more LTOs in your, you know, menu calendar for the year is going to be the kind of best bet for confirming that new traffic through the restaurant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and it seems like Rubik's is perfectly positioned for this world because, I mean, you're already pulling in your network, you're pulling in all the influencers, and you guys are nimble, and it's all about flavor, and that's what the world wants. So is there anything, what's on the next flavor network? What's next? Is there anything you can talk about that you're seeing that's popping?
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, our goal right now actually is we are going to be putting out a report at the end of October that's really specific to, you know, flavors that Gen Z wants. And we're working with our influencers now, again, to kind of pull the Gen Z community on, you know, things like what is the right spice level? What are the right flavor combinations that you want to see? We know global flavors are big, but what's approachable? What's too far right now? And so we're in the process of really getting some of that information, again, using our influencers as the conduit to speak to their communities, because ultimately they know their communities way better than we do, and they're trusted advisors to their community. So we're working with them to tap into them and really get that insight. We have an activation already. It's next week. We'll be at a pop-up at Lollapalooza.
Awesome.
An event that we know is a huge cultural moment for Gen Z. We'll be sampling some of the flavors that our influencers have created with our chefs, getting real-time input to better understand what they like, what they don't like, what they wish were on some of these menus. And again, just getting much more qualitative, real, authentic, unfiltered insight from this community. And as far as, you know, what the future holds for our network, ultimately we want to grow it. We want to bring in more influencers from diverse, you know, groups and subsets and niches to better understand a broader subset of our segment's customer. And then I think, you know, moving forward, it's our goal to continue to use the network to kind of take their ideas, but also let our customers, the QSRs, the FSRs in the world, tap into them as well. So being able to bring them with us to meetings or bring our customers' questions to their communities, the idea is to, again, really remove that guesswork and allow our customers to have a better connection to their customer. And so, yeah, we're really excited about expanding it. And yeah, we've been doing this for a couple of months now, and I've already generated some really exciting insight that we believe will really help the restaurant industry and making business decisions that are smarter and better for their business.
Well, I mean, it's brilliant marketing for your company, and it's
Thank you.
Super smart for your clientele. I mean, it's a speed to market thing, and it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I look forward to the
research that you're going to put out in October. I'd love to see that.
Absolutely.
I could talk to you for hours. I mean, we have so many things.
I know, this has been so fun.
Yeah. So I have one last question for you. All right, and I ask this of all our guests on Fork Tales. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
Gosh, I would love to say that it's like some home-cooked meal from my mother or something like that, but my husband will call me out on that. I'd have to say my last meal would probably be Chipotle. The hold that Chipotle has on me is diabolical. I love it. It's consistent. It's fresh. It's a good price point.
Yep.
So I would probably have Chipotle. I would maybe also have a pint of Jenny's ice cream. I don't know if you've had Jenny's.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from Columbus, Ohio.
Sure.
So that she's religion there. So I would have a pint of Jenny's ice cream and maybe a dirty martini to wash it all down.
Well done. Vodka or gin?
Vodka.
I figured.
Yes,
yeah, vodka. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the real martini's gin, but I just, you know, it's a,
I know.
I get this debate
it.
A lot, but and the Jenny's I'm very familiar with. We built. I shouldn't say we built, but for about 15 years, we helped build Turkey Hill's ice cream brand. So we knew every single competitor. I spent a lot of time in Columbus too, out at Abbott. So
Great city.
Abbott Labs and all that. So well, hey, it was fantastic. I really appreciate your time,
likewise.
Your insights, your energy, and let's stay in touch. I mean, there's some great stuff here.
For sure. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Michael, so
Thank
much
you.
For having me. I appreciate it.